If you're passionate about sports and looking for a thrill, you need to check out the freshly redesigned XBet. They're calling it the last sports book you'll ever join. I've been playing on XBet, and they really do have it all. Whether odds on basketball, combat sports, or even betting on the next Bitcoin dip. And the best part is, when you win, you get paid quick. But it's not just about placing bets. XBet is a whole experience. They support athletes and sports shows just like ours, and they give back to the community with tons of free bets and cash prize contests. Did I mention they also have a casino now? Spin the slots, play some roulette, or even try your luck at the live tables, all from a mobile platform that lets you enjoy the fun on the go. Whether you're super into sports betting or curious about trying it out, you need a site that makes it fun and easy. That's why you've got to check out XBet. Sign up today using the promo code TOOLSHED and get a generous bonus of up to $1,000 on your first deposit. That's right, promo code TOOLSHED for free cash bonus to kickstart your journey. With so many great UFC cards on the horizon and the fact that baseball season is in full swing, there's never been a better time to play. Make your next bet, XBet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 252. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 great co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. It's almost December, which is wild.
I know, man.
It's almost time to do our rankings episodes, which are exciting too. But it feels like there's not been an off season. I know there's not much of an off season ever for Dynasty, but we've both been full throttle on content, and it feels like it's just not going to slow down. So I was trying to think of like when there would be like a down period of content, but I don't think there really will be. Like I really am not sure. Like my goal was to be done with all of my team prospect write-ups by the end of December, and then do like MLB teams for Dynasty breakdowns throughout every day in January. And then maybe it'll slow down a bit in February, but I still have to do something. So yeah, I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but it's fun. I love it.
Never slow down. Like, yeah, maybe for like 3 days after the season ends or something like that. But yeah, it's grinding with the content, doing, you know, team prospect rankings. I'm doing some, you know, redraft stuff too, a little bit, and player profiles and trying to do projections. So yeah, it's And I got, you know, Fantasy Baseball Black Book stuff out, which will be out, I think, the middle of December on Amazon. A lot of great writers in that, too. So, yeah, just never ends. But, hey, we love it. And that makes it so much easier to be able to, you know, do something we love, get some, you know, supplement our income because of it. And makes it so much easier when you love it. Absolutely. But we are going to break down a recent Dynasty mock draft we did. A lot of, you know, the industry people that you all know and love. 14 teams. We did, how many rounds did we do? 25 rounds. So quick math, what's that? 350 picks, I think it was. Something in that ballpark. But we'll get right into that after the usual housekeeping here. You can follow us on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it these days. Chris of that RotoClick, I'm Eric Cross 04. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. And of course, be sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for all of our rankings and everything else we just talked about, rankings and, you know, team reports and player profiles and trade calculator for Chris and all that good stuff. Check those out. We greatly appreciate the support. All right, let's hop right into it here as I throw it up on the screen as we're doing some YouTube now. So if you want to go watch this on YouTube and see our bright, shining faces here as we talk about this, you can do that. I think it's youtube.com/toolshedfantasy or something like that. You can find us. I'm sure you can. And let's see. I'll throw up that tab here. Oh, let's see. I'm getting a little rusty at doing this. Here we go. Share that tab. And boom, there we are. All right. So, again, 14 teams. I drew the fourth pick. Chris drew the eighth pick. We also had Chris, Baseball Pods, Dylan White, and Jeff Ponce from Baseball America, Zach Beck from the Dynasty Dugout, Chris Blessing from Baseball HQ, Lucas Bieri, who obviously we just had on for the last two episodes from doing his Patreon, and James Anderson from RotoWire, Jesse Roche from Baseball Prospectus, Matt Thompson from Prospects Live, Chris Welsh from literally everywhere, but mostly in Prospect One, a member from my Discord there in the 12 spot, and Shelly Verstrait in the 14 spot. So nice little group of mix of people here. And it started off pretty chalk. I think the top, I think it was 11, I believe, or my top 11. Obviously, a little bit of varying order. But first three off the board, all outfielders. Ronald Acuna Jr., Julio Rodriguez, Corbin Carroll. Then I went with Bobby Witt Jr. at four. I was really hoping that Beck wouldn't take Carroll three, as I wanted Carroll at four. Though, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. great as well. Tucker went in the five spot. Tatis six. Soto seven. Yordan eight. Otani nine. Clegg took Yordan at eight. Betts 10. Judge 11. Matt Olson 12. First pitcher off the board was Spencer Strider to Jeff Ponce at number 13. And Shelley rounded out the first round with AL Rookie of the Year Gunnar Henderson. So Clegg, at your pick at eight, I mean, I think the top six were no surprise. Like, I think after six is when you can kind of, you know, go a few different directions. And obviously you got Yordan at eight. Is that, you know, after the, let's say you even had the seven spot, would you have taken Yordan at seven, or kind of what were your thoughts after that top six or where you would have gone?
I think that just looking at the board, it was kind of a, obviously the tier at the top and then the tier that went through seven. So it's pretty chalky of how I have it. And I was pretty torn between Otani, Yordan, and Mookie Betts. I would have taken Soto at seven, so that wasn't really too much of a question there. But it was certainly a debate between Otani and Alvarez, and even Betts to an extent. Getting second base with Betts, I think, is pretty huge. But I end up landing on Yordan just from the standpoint of that I feel like he's just one of the best pure hitters in the game. And ultimately, the power upside, like he could be a 340 home run bat. And not starting with speed is tough in the first round, and so you have to make up for that. And so I do think that that's probably the weakest point of my team, if I have to go back and look at that. And I think that, I don't remember if Dylan posted the final projected standings or not with Steamer, but I was certainly lower in that category. So that was the only negative and probably a reason to take Mookie, even though he's not a massive steal source at this point. But yeah, the first seven were certainly how anybody I would have wanted. But then Yordan and Ohtani and Betts were kind of all debated there in that spot.
Yeah, I think that'd be a tough spot for me. And Ohtani too. Yeah, I was looking at Ohtani. Obviously, I wasn't taking him at four, but I was wondering where he would go. Obviously, I knew he wouldn't fall out of the first round entirely, but with him not pitching for a year, obviously that throws a little bit of a wrinkle into it. But I think nine is a pretty fair spot for him, still back into the top 10. Yeah, and Mookie Betts, and even, you know, if you're playing in a Yahoo League, which I know plenty of people that listen to this are, I think he has shortstop eligibility in Yahoo Leagues. I think he played like 14, 15 games at short too. It's not enough to qualify, you know, on like, you know, Fantrax or NFBC or something like that. But yeah, eligibility for Mookie, like, he's just so damn good and one of the best pure athletes, I think, in the game today. But first, were you surprised at all, you know, first pitcher off the board being Strider? I mean, it kind of has to be at this point, right? Because Gerrit Cole, you know, obviously, you know, several years older than Strider. You know, if McClanahan was healthy, maybe McClanahan could, you know, make a, you know, claim for that spot. But obviously, he's out for the entire year in 2024. So it's really Strider, a gap, Cole, and then pretty much another gap down to that next tier that we saw a lot of those arms go in round three. So yeah, Strider going to Jeff Ponce there, 13. Would you have taken, like, if you were in the back end of that first round, Chris, would you have considered taking Strider in one of those spots?
No, I just don't take pitchers that high in Dynasty. And so typically, like, that's kind of a spot where I avoid, and I typically would wait for like the second tier of arms. And I did that. So it is an interesting spot though, looking at the players that went, because the board really opens up. I think, especially after Judge, and I can argue after Betts, it kind of opens up, because I'm not as high on Judge. I wouldn't have Judge at 11. But for me, yeah, I mean, I can't argue against Strider being there in that spot. But you look at the picks after that, it's like, okay, like Strider or Gunnar Henderson, I've got them both close. Strider or Seager, give me Seager there. Strider or Langford, I mean, Jeff got both of them. Good for him. Strider or Ellie, probably Strider. Strider or Vlad, probably Strider. Strider or Cole, I mean, back-to-back for me. It's top tier of arms. Probably would have taken Riley over Strider, Harper, and then maybe Luis Robert and Devers. But it's not, I mean, like, given who was picked right around, like, you know, I don't fault Jeff at all, especially, you know, starting with Strider, he was able to just go bat heavy for the next, you know, crazy amount of rounds down to the eighth round, getting Tanner Bibee. So, you know, it sets you up to do some different things with the build. And ultimately, like, I don't think he missed out on any elite talent by taking Strider there at all, personally. So, you know, I can't fault him. I like the pick, but I just don't typically take pitchers that high in Dynasty.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Obviously, I think that's fair value for Strider. I think a little bit higher than where I have him in my rankings. But at the same time, you know, in that back end of the first, early part of the second, I think that's a fair spot for Strider. And then that kind of leads us around to, you know, someone like Wyatt Langford. And that, I think that speaks volumes that, you know, someone like Jeff Ponce took his first bat overall was a guy that has yet to play in the major leagues. I think that just speaks volumes on, you know, just the type of talent we're looking at here with Wyatt Langford, where this is a guy that, you know, could burst onto the scene and, you know, be one of those major impact rookies. Like, you know, obviously all the tools are there. You know, let's say Langford was there for your second round pick where you took Harper, which was at pick 21. Would you have considered Langford in that spot, Chris?
I think so, but it's still tough because there's some names on the board that went after that I would have still had higher. I mean, like Devers and Robert, I probably both would have taken over Langford just because I'm more comfortable with what they've done. And with, like, you're hoping that Langford turns into something like that they've become so far. But I think Langford's upside certainly sits him in this range. But I just wouldn't be, I don't take prospects that high typically either, like starter pitchers. So for me, like if I didn't take Harper, it probably would have been Robert who was under consideration, which maybe I should have taken Robert for the speed element. Trey's just a little older than I wanted to start with after, and I know Harper's a similar age. So I'm sitting here like, you know, doesn't make sense, but whatever. Devers too. I like both those guys. So if I hadn't taken Harper, probably have been Devers or Robert there versus a prospect.
Yeah, and I think if I actually took Robert with my second round pick. That was pick 25, so that was pretty solid value. I have him ranked, I think, 14th or 15th right now in my rankings. But if Langford was there, I would have had – that would have been a very tough debate because, you know, if Robert had been taken by, you know, right before me, like if you had taken him or, you know, Chris Blessing, Lucas Beery, James, that would have been really tough because like, it was him the night. It's like this massive cluster of guys that I would have had a hard time picking between, you know, guys like, you know, Joe Ram and Turner, Devers, Michael Harris, who all kind of went in the next handful of picks after I took Robert. So that would have been tough. So I'm glad that Robert was there. But let's say he wasn't there, but you know, Langford was. Like I might have considered Langford there because I think I had Langford, you know, right in that top 25 range in my rankings. And that my second round pick was the 25th overall pick. So I am obviously all in on Langford. I know obviously I'm not alone in that. Where do I have him over? Yeah, I have him 25 on the dot. So I definitely would have probably taken him there. But if it was him versus Robert, I probably still would have gone Robert. I agree with you there. Again, I have Robert. I actually have him 12th. Okay, a couple spots higher than I thought I did. But obviously Robert has that injury risk and, you know, a bit of a risky second round pick here. But obviously the talent's first round talent. Like he went 38-20 this year while missing, you know, probably 100 or so plate appearances off the season. But, you know, obviously the talent is awesome there. See, so sticking with the prospects, so let's go look at see who the first prospects were taken in this one. So obviously Langford was the first prospect off the board. And then Jackson Holliday was the second one to Chris Blessing at 210. And then we go into the third round. Blessing went back-to-back prospects with Jackson Churio there. He was the third prospect off the board. Junior Caminero went to Jesse Roche. And before I keep going with this list, actually, let me finish it. And then I have a question for you about Caminero, and as I know he's your number one prospect. So Caminero was the fourth one off the board. Evan Carter was the fifth one off the board at 313 to Jeff Ponce. And then sixth prospect off the board. Actually, we have a little bit of a gap here in prospects into the fifth round. Wow, we have actually a big gap in prospects. Trying to find the next one here. Still looking. Jason Dominguez way down in the sixth round was the next prospect. So as we can kind of stop it there because there's that bigger gap. And I took Jordan Lawler in the seventh. So that kind of runs out like the top seven or eight prospects or so. With Caminero being your number one, I assume he's still your number one. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. That's just want to make sure nothing changed there. Was he in consideration? Obviously, you went Corbin Burns there in the third. You know, I think that's great value there. I was really debating him. I was actually between him and Alonzo, where I took Alonzo 3-4. Almost went Burns there myself. So obviously, I think that's good value. But were you considering Caminero there?
No, I think I would have begun to consider him in the fourth. At 4-7, I took O'Neal Cruz. So I think that there's a similar, you know, similar kind of player, not to like a direct comp, obviously, but in the fact that they're younger, they're still unproven, but they have the track record to be and have the upside potential. So that's probably where I would have started to consider him just based on the names available on the board. It was basically impossible for me to pass up Corbin Burns at that spot. Like you get an ace just to kind of build your staff around. And I still believe that Burns has that upside. But I think that for me, like the fourth round would probably be the spot where I begin to consider a prospect, but only if that prospect is like Caminero, where they're going to contribute right out of the gate in the upcoming season, because I'm looking to win. And I think that there's probably as much risk with Caminero as there is O'Neal Cruz, and there may be more with Cruz. So that's probably the spot where I've looked at them and just looking at the other names around, like, yeah, I would have taken Caminero over a lot of the names that went around that turn from 3 to 4 between me and my third and fourth round pick.
Yeah, no, that's fair. And yeah, I think you could say Cameron Nell is maybe a little bit safer than Cruz, but Cruz also runs a lot more. So maybe a little bit higher, you know, upside, higher ceiling for O'Neal Cruz. The fourth round, I was heartbroken in the fourth round. If you're watching the, you know, obviously you can't see this board if you're only listening on the podcast, but if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see at 4-11, I mean, I still like the value I got here with Randy Arozarena. I was so excited that I thought I was going to get Jordan Walker. And then Chris Blessing steals him from me at 4-10. I was heartbroken, and I had to pivot. Again, I like that value in a Rosarena a good amount. Because I think it's funny. I think Rosarena went from being one of the more overrated players, you know, after that massive kind of end of the season and for the postseason he had a few years ago. I think he went from being one of the most overrated players to one of the more underrated kind of big name players now, where it's people are kind of like looking for him to do more, but he's still doing, you know, that power speed blend. He's kind of improved as a hitter. So I liked him a lot in the fourth round there. But Jordan Walker, I think that's great value on Walker, because that's pick 52 here. And I still have him in like about 20 spots ahead of that in my overall rankings. So absolutely love that spot for Jordan Walker here. Kind of going back up here to the previous round, Yuri Perez was the we had a big run of pitchers here in the third round, including Clegg taking Burns there at 3-8. We had first pick of the third round to Chris Baseball Pods, Yuri Perez. And then Luis Castillo went to Lucas Beery. Chris took Corbin Burns. We also had George Kirby at 3-11 to Chris Welsh. And Zach Gallen off the board to Shelley to end the round. And fourth round, this is where it kind of got interesting. Scooball was the, what is that, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, the eighth starting pitcher off the board. Ninth, if you include Shohei Ohtani. What are your thoughts on that, Chris? Seeing Scooball, obviously Scooball had phenomenal second half of the year and, you know, very talented, but that is, I think that's very high for a guy like Tarik Scooball, or is it? What are your thoughts on that?
It's too high for my likings, personally. I know that he's being pushed up significantly, and a lot are talking about him as a top 10 arm, but I'm not there on him, especially in Dynasty, just given some of the arms that went after him, like Grayson Rodriguez and Tyler Glasnow and even Kevin Gausman, if you're looking to like build a contender. Like, those are all players I'd want over him still. I mean, Bobby Miller went in the first pick of the fifth round. I think I like him better than Scooball, Pablo Lopez, Zach Wheeler, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, like Freddie Peralta even. Like, those are all guys that I want over Scooball still, because it's just a small sample of the stuff in velo ticking up, and I'm not sure it sticks. Maybe it does, and maybe I'm wrong, but maybe it doesn't. And so I had the health track record plus the fact that, I mean, he just hasn't had a long track record of success. Like, I'm just not willing to invest that price in Dynasty, especially with some of the other pitchers on the board still.
Yeah. I'm pretty much right in line with that. I like Scooball a lot. I think where do I have Scooball among starting pitchers in my Dynasty rankings? He's right there. What number is that? That is SP. I have him as SP 17 right now, so it's not like I have him terribly lower. But yeah, I don't know if I'd want to start my team with a Scooball, but I'm saying that as a guy that waited way too long to take my first pitcher in this. I mean, I wanted to establish, you know, my offensive core, and I love the offensive core I established. First five rounds, I went Witt, Robert, Pete Alonso, Randy Arozarena, and then Matt McClain at 5-4. And I like McClain a lot. But then that left me with, you know, taking not the great. I like who I took as my first pitcher in the sixth round. I went Gavin Williams. But at the same time, is that a guy I want to start as like my ace, quote unquote, for my Dynasty team? So, and you actually, that you took your second pitcher in that round with Aaron Nola, and you waited a little bit. You got Nick Lodolo as your three, and then a little bit further down, you got Bieber down there, Imanaga. How did you like how your pitching staff turned out? Obviously, you know, in Dynasty, you know, hitting's obviously pretty much king, I think we can say, in Dynasty leagues. But how did you feel with your pitching staff, that since we're on the subject of pitching right now?
I mean, I thought it worked out great just to grab fallen pitcher values. And I know that's, you know, maybe you look and say that, okay, they fell for a reason. Yeah, maybe so. But Corbin Burns at 36 overall feels good. That's third round pick. Aaron Nola at 77 still feels good to me. I mean, I'm a huge believer in Nola still.
I would have taken him at 6-11 if he was still there, if you hadn't taken him.
Yeah, and I honestly wanted Freddie Peralta in the fifth. He went one pick before me to James Anderson. So Peralta was like, I see Peralta like his second half of like an ace. So I was back on that train. But Lodolo fell all the way to 133. And I'm not sure I was like actively looking for a starter, but when he was there, I was like, okay, why not? And then I went my first reliever at 148, like it's saves only. And Josh Hader was out there. I only had a couple of relievers that had gone at that point, but at 148, 11th round to get one of the best closers, I felt good about. But then the arms that fell, I thought were pretty wild.
Yeah.
Shoto Imanaga is, I mean, I think obviously he's older. He's 30 years old and you know, Yamamoto is 25, but Imanaga fits my squad because I have a squad built to win in year one. I mean, up and down the board, it's all players that I think can help me win. And Imanaga brings over an arsenal that I think is going to have pretty high upside. I mean, Stuff Plus in the WBC graded above Yamamoto. Yeah, it was a small sample, but ultimately, I think that Imanaga is going to be legit. And then Bieber at 204. I know people just crap on Shane Bieber and hate him at this point, but Shane Bieber is still a solid arm. And when he's your SP6, then, you know, whatever. Like, you can afford a Bieber as your SP6. From going in the 15th round at 204, just felt like really good value. And then after that, you know, the board just kind of opens up a lot. And there's just a wide range of outcomes. I took Paul Sewald to get another closer in the 18th round. And then I took Connor Phillips late in the 21st round, just as kind of an upside play. He may be in the rotation, may not be. He may be a reliever long term, but at least there's some upside to play with. And then I also took Hurston Waldrop in the 22nd at 301, who I believe is going to get a decent amount of time in the starting rotation with Atlanta this year. I mean, they were highly considering bringing him up for the playoffs. So they value him pretty highly. I mean, shoot, he might be traded. Like, tomorrow, you may be listening to this, and he might be on the White Sox. Like, and in that case, he probably is in the rotation. They're all Braves rotation. But, yeah, I just really felt like I took fallen values. And then I took the upside shots late with Phillips and Waldrop, who I don't necessarily need to contribute to me this year because I have a pretty set rotation otherwise. But they're upside plays where if they do contribute, then that's great.
Yeah, it's funny looking at, you mentioned obviously Bieber obviously stands out as one of your pitchers as just to where you took him. The 15th round in general is like, I call it the "oh how the mighty have fallen" round for, you know, for one reason or another. You got guys like Shane Bieber and Jacob DeGrom, Sandy Alcantara went in that round. So kind of like pitchers that have kind of fallen because of, you know, injuries or whatnot. Even a pitching prospect, you know, Andrew Painter. And obviously, he would have taken way higher, you know, a year or so ago before all the, you know, issues with the elbow popped up. You got, you know, former top prospect Brett Beatty, who kind of fell off a bit last year. Andrew Vaughn, who's kind of, you know, been okay, but not as good as people thought. Jeremy Pena, who was, you know, the hot name at this time last year. You know, Carlos Correa has fallen, you know, has fallen off lately. Obviously, Jared Kelnick's in there as well. So that's just a kind of an interesting round to see, like, all those names there. Kind of surprising to see some of those fall to that range. But going back up into one thing I noticed here with two prospects, one which I actually took that, and I think I was talking about this recently on another podcast about how it's kind of funny how small sample sizes can change kind of perceived value so much either one way or another, Chris. Like you look at two prospects like Evan Carter and Jordan Lawler. Jeff Ponce took Evan Carter 313, and I took Jordan Lawler at 7-4. So that is a approximately, what, 50, 45 to 50. That's a lot. That's pick 41. And then I got him at 80, 84, 88. So yeah, almost a 50 pick gap there. And I think, well, they were ranked pretty closely in a lot of rankings. I think the one that was ranked higher more often than not was Jordan Lawler. And obviously, and he had a very small sample size and obviously didn't do much with it at all, but extremely small sample size. And then Carter obviously, you know, shined down the, you know, the last month and a half of the season and obviously into the postseason winning a ring as a rookie. Were you surprised to see that big of a gap between Carter and Lawler? And kind of how do you, in your own rankings, when you see like guys like this, you know, the Lawlers that struggled in their little cup of coffee versus the guys like Carter, who came out of the, you know, guns a-blazing after their debut. How much of that do you factor into your rankings? Like how much do you look into that?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly matters, but not like a ton, because you're looking at a very small sample and a lot can happen in a small sample. When we're talking about a game that's a big sample product, like baseball is 162 games, and you know, we've got to look at the larger picture. I like Evan Carter, I like Jordan Lawler, but I certainly feel like that the dip on Lawler happened because he didn't perform well. And you know, I mean, I don't think he was ready for a call up. I know they got aggressive and called him up, but you know, even then, I still believe that Lawler is going to be a really solid prospect. And Evan Carter obviously is probably going to give you more out of the gate, just immediate contribution. He's going to give you a little more OBP, but this is an average league, so it is a pretty sizable gap, but I don't factor in the small sample too much. I mean, it plays a small role in what I'm looking at for dynasty valuation.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, Chris. Who were some of your, you know, in the early, let's go with like the first like five rounds. You know, were there anything that really stood out to you, whether it be, you know, a trend or any picks that really surprised you, whether it being a lot lower than you thought or a lot higher than you thought?
Looking at the board, you know, it was interesting to me to see some of the... I was surprised to see Devers go at 27, honestly. That one seemed a little low. Bo Bichette fell. Like, Dylan White just scooped up some really good value.
He started with
Julio Rodriguez, and he got Devers and Bo Bichette. Like, that's just absurdly good start. And so I was a little bit jealous of that, but those values surprised me a bit. Jose Ramirez was another big faller, which is an interesting, he's been one that I've struggled to evaluate. J. Abrams, I knew he'd go top 50. Seeing him go 35, like, kind of put it into perspective where he's being valued now. So that was interesting to see. I thought it was interesting to see the order of the pitchers that went, looking at like the starting pitchers at least. Burns going a little later than I thought. Seeing obviously Skubal as high as he went. Tristan Casas' value soared. I mean, he went first pick of the fourth round, 43rd overall. So that was a little higher than I thought he might go, but his valuation's all over the board too. I mean, he had a great season. So, you know, it's hard to really give a great evaluation of where he lands long-term, but this offseason he's kind of going all over the board. Nothing really jumped out in like a bad way. I mean, Mike Trout, like I scooped him at 64, didn't know where he would land.
I was going to mention him too. Yeah, that. I thought long and hard. I think I told you this, like when I took McLean at 5-4, so four picks at four, you took Trout. I sat there, I saw that I was on the clock, and I saw that Trout was still in my queue. And I literally sat there for a good 6-7 minutes just thinking about it. Like, do I take Trout? Do I not take Trout? I already had two outfielders. I think that played into it a little bit. If I didn't have, you know, two outfielders already in the first four picks, I might have gone Trout there, but he's a hard one, dude, to rank. Obviously, he's Mike freaking Trout. And you just got him at pick, 64. You know, did you feel, like, how did you feel taking him? Like, obviously, that's good value, but were you still a little, you know, did you have some reservations about it just because of, obviously, the durability question marks he has going forward?
I mean, yeah, I had questions about it, but at some point, it just feels too good to be true. And maybe right. It is, you know, maybe he doesn't play again. And you know, I'm just kind of screwed. I mean, he's going to play again, but maybe he doesn't play at a high level again. Saw some steps backwards last season, but if you're going for it in year one, which I'm doing, and Trout has the potential to give you 30 to 40 home runs, like we know he still has that upside in him, even if he doesn't steal any bases, I think the average is going to be respectable. I thought about it. I certainly thought about not taking him and letting him slide. But the options behind him were just not interesting enough to me where it was like, okay, like I feel fine letting him slide and just seeing where he goes. So take an upside play and hope that he plays, you know, 3/4 of the season next year.
Yeah, that's really all you can hope for. If you can get like 120-ish games out of Mike Trout, I think you're doing pretty damn good there. It's funny though, like if you told me before the season that we'd be doing this, you know, in the November, and Josh Lowe would be taking 2 picks ahead of Mike Trout in the Dynasty mock draft, even though I've always been, I like Josh Lowe a good amount, always kind of have. I would have thought you were crazy. That's just really weird to see. It's weird to see some of these big names are just kind of falling down because of injuries and they're getting older now. It's just weird to see. Obviously, all those names I mentioned in the 15th round earlier. Yeah. But with me, it was literally between McLean and Trout. I was not really considering any of the other names that went, maybe a little bit of Jazz, but it was really, I had really to narrow down to McLean and Trout. Obviously, I went with McLean, but yeah, I think that's really good value for Trout there for sure. I wanted to ask you something. You just kind of made me think of something here. About just your kind of strategy overall going in. Like obviously we talk about there's kind of like the three strategies going into, a dynasty startup. Like, all right, do you want to go, win now right away? You want to go like the win soon approach or the win later approach? And I've seen all three done and all three can, win you championships down the road. Absolutely. But it seems like Chris, more often than not, or maybe every time that I've been in any type of mock draft or real draft with you, you've gone with that win now approach. Like, is that your strategy every single time? Do you ever go with like the win soon approach? Obviously I don't think you ever go with the win later, but is that like every time you go into a draft, is it that, all right, let's get the best team I can now. And then we'll figure out years 2, 3, 4, when the time comes.
Yeah. I mean, typically I'm always playing for the first year because one, you don't know how long a league's going to last. They fold all the time. I mean, for various reasons, dynasty leagues fold. And we've seen the approach of just drafting all prospects and trying to make that work. And then the league folds and you're still sitting on the prospects that have never given you anything. I think that's just burning money. So, like, especially in a paid dynasty league, I'm always going to go for it. Now, sometimes it works out better than others. If you have too many people that are also going with that strategy, then you just better hope your team stays healthy and that you luck out in a few spots. You have to. But also, I feel confident enough in my ability to find prospects and pick up and churn where I'm good taking the win now approach and you get the prospects later kind of thing. So if I can build a win now team and still have a respectable average age, then I'm always going to do that. And so, yeah, my team's a little older than I typically like, but, started Jordan. I mean, Jordan's what, 26, 27 now? Maybe I'm giving him a little bit older.
He is, I can tell you here. I think he's 27. I'm way far down my spreadsheet. Hold on, let me scroll up. Yeah, Jordan's, about 26 and a half.
Okay. I mean, I know Harper's over 30 and Burns is over 30. Trout's over 30. Nola's over 30. Yeah, my team's older than I thought.
Hey, but it's not St. Louis Cardinals rotation old, though.
That's true. But again, the prime of these players, especially with pitchers, is into the 30s. Hitters peak at about 27. So if you can get that production, and I think if I can get 3 good years out of this team, then I'm confident in the ability to churn it and be able to not have to rebuild at any point, where I can just find these guys to replace them ultimately. So, yeah, I mean, my philosophy is always going to be to build a team to win the league and then figure out the rest later. Figure out if I'm not thinking about year 5. I'm thinking about years 1 through 3 and trying to win in those years because most leagues don't make it to 5.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. Especially you brought up if it's a paid dynasty, like obviously people out there doing, keeper dynasties, for free, just for fun with their friends or whoever. But yeah, it's almost like, why would you want to just kind of throw away your money in year 1? That's a great point. Whether it's, $25, $50, $100, whatever, that's a great point there. And I think I often am, obviously more towards win now. I've never once gone with the win later approach. I'll sometimes go with the win. I think I'm like kind of in between the win now and win soon. Like meaning when I say win soon, and this might mean different things for different people. But when I say win soon, I'm saying like year two, or at worst case scenario, win year three. Like, win later is what I'm thinking, 4, 5, 6. So people that go just go like prospect, and you're like, all right, this team's gonna finish bottom three or whatever. But with my team, I think this is a team that's, obviously it was just a mock. We're not gonna play this out. This is a team that, with some tweaking, throughout the season, or trade or something, I think this team could be a contender. I have a great hitting core, pitching. I mean, pitching's the area of kind of weakness with me. I have a lot of talent. I went Gavin Williams in the sixth, but my second pitcher is Shane McClanahan, which is kind of where I'd make that decision. Where I saw him on the board, it was 8-11, so that is pick 93 overall. Where obviously, if he wasn't hurt, he'd be up there in that third round, maybe up in there in the second round. Maybe it would have been the SP3 off the board, as obviously he was toe to toe with Strider for the number one dynasty pitcher for a little bit earlier in the season before he started getting hurt. But obviously, that's to be not going to help me at all in year one. Gavin Williams, I got Hunter Brown, who I think can bounce back, Christian Javier, Bayo, Michael King, Andrew Abbott, so I got Chris Bassett in the 21st, which I thought was phenomenal value. Obviously, he's older, but still, pretty solid arm for, 21st round. So I think with some tweaking and, like I said, maybe a trade or two, I could get this team in contention, but, maybe more so my year two, get McClanahan back in 2025. Maybe Brown has taken that next step. Maybe Breon Bayo is taking that next step, make a trade, whatever. Williams becomes an ace, which I think he can. So I think my window was more so 2025, which is weird to say. But that's kind of where I fall. I'm more towards win now, but sometimes I do go over to that win soon approach, just because of when you see some of these guys falling, that McClanahan's perfect example of what's like, man, do I want to get passing up, or do I want to grab that value and just, take the, the X, for 2024 with him and not get any production out of him. So, yeah, that's always a tough one for me to kind of gauge. But, yeah, I think I went more towards the win now here as well. But at the same time, you often get a lot of people that are going with that win now approach, I feel. So, like, this is, a 14-teamer. So if you have 12 people in this league all going win now, sometimes it can create some value drops that you're like, oh, man, that's too much. That's too good of a value to scoop up. So that's something when I get intrigued by sometimes, and sometimes it's too much for me to pass up. But like with McClanahan, I think that was pretty good value there. Obviously, I think once he comes back, he's still going to be, top five, top 10 pitcher in this game. So if Brown takes that step and Williams takes that step, I think that could have been a pretty good 1-2-3 there. But obviously, we'll never know. Obviously, we're not playing this out. But going over to the first base position here, Chris, I thought it was kind of interesting how this position played out a little bit too. You had Olson going first at this position, pick 12. Vladdy was second, followed by Harper, obviously, who you took, Freeman in the second round. I took Pete Alonso, the polar bear, in the third round. And then Cassis went first pick in the fourth round. So that's 1-2-3. So he was the sixth first baseman off the board. Then Bellinger in the fifth, Torque, Naylor, Vinny P, and Christian Encarnacion Strand kind of run up. I think that was a top 10 or 11, and that rounds up the sixth round as well. Then we had a little bit of a drop down to, Yandy and Goldschmidt and guys that are, I think, a tier below all those names I already mentioned. And we already talked about Cassis, but what were your thoughts about that kind of little cluster there in the sixth round, like right after you took Nola, then went Torque and Naylor, and a few pick gap, and then Vinny P and Encarnacion Strand were, if you didn't have Harper, let's say that, or if he was still only eligible, would you have considered going with a Torque or a Naylor or like a Vinny P or Encarnacion Strand there?
I'm not sure I would have wanted to in that spot. They were a little higher than I would have liked. I think Torkelson's a fair argument there at 78. Like, he performed well enough to certainly earn that. But the other guys, I'm just not confident enough in. Like, that's the tier I would want to shop in if I didn't have a first baseman. But I'd want to shop in that tier closer to pick 100 rather than pick 78 through 84. But you have to follow the market, and the market kind of dictated, because the rest of the first basemen aren't so great. I mean, you got a declining Paul Goldschmidt that went 110.
You know, Yandy Diaz at 111. You had Spencer Steer at 113. Christian Walker at 122, which are more than fair spots for those guys. But first base does fall off pretty hard. I will say, I think that Nathaniel Lowe going 181.
Dude, was a I was just trying to find him.
Yeah.
I was just trying to find him as I was looking at my own rankings and I saw, I was like, oh, yeah, I have Lowe in that range. So he went 181. So that's what rounds.
Yeah. Jeff got him 181.
Oh, my 13th round? I wasn't even scrolling down that far. I thought I just couldn't find him or he was like a different color tile or something on the board. Man, that is insane. How did who did I have at first base? Oh, yeah, I had Alonzo. So I wasn't really looking. But man, even as a corner infielder, that's phenomenal value right there on Nathaniel Lowe.
I thought so too. I mean, he had a down year, but even with a down year, it's still really good value considering the other first baseman. They went before him and then we're going around him. Like, I absolutely love that. Like, I would have taken him like 150 probably and been really thrilled with it. Think of him at 181 as a steal.
I mean, I have him. See, what do I have in my rankings here? I just lost him. I have, okay, I can't. Oh, 127 right now in my own rankings. So, yeah, that is phenomenal value. And I probably would have jumped on that if I didn't already have, you know, a guy like Pete Alonso there in the third round. But yeah, it was interesting to see that cluster of names there. You know, Torque, I don't hate that, but at the same time, do you see like a big ROI opportunity there with Torque? Because I feel like he could just kind of settle in into that range. So if you're fine with that, then great. Like, do you see him, like, if we did this again next year? I mean, we will, we always do. But do you see him like maybe jumping a few rounds? I just don't really see that next big step for him. And where he's at now is totally fine. If he settles in as like a, you know, 250, 260 guy with 30, 35 home runs, you know, you take that. And, you know, hopefully that Detroit lineup gets better here over the next few years when they get, you know, guys like Colt Keith and others coming up. So you're hoping that the supporting cast around him is better. And the ballpark won't be getting better. But what were your thoughts? Do you think that's a good spot for maybe some ROI for Torkelson?
I'm not sure how much he can go up because even with the year he had this year, he finished 84th on the Razzball Player Rater, and that was hitting 31 home runs. And that was also a year of compiling. I mean, he had 684 plate appearances, so a big year of compiling numbers. And so obviously the runs in RBI were high. Yeah, I think he can hit better than 233. But even if he's a 250 hitter that hits you 30 home runs, that maybe jumps you like 10 or 15 spots. So you jump from 84, we'll say 70, maybe we'll give him 65 on the player rater. And I don't know. I think that there's like a potential for return, but not a 3-round jump, I don't think.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. So that's why, you know, I probably would, if I was going to go in that range, I probably would have opted to go one of the guys, the last two. You know, obviously I love Vinny P. Let's see how the shoulder holds up and where the power's at following that shoulder surgery. But, you know, Vinny P or even Christian Encarnacion Strand, who I think could really jump, I think he could jump a few rounds and maybe be like, maybe not a top 2-round or even top 3-round guy, but maybe a 4th-round guy that's like in that top 50 discussion in a league this size. Because you saw what he did, you know, he took him a little bit of time to get his feet wet, but once he did, I mean, he was kind of performing like the guy that we saw dominate the minor leagues for the last couple of years. So, and then obviously that ballpark is phenomenal. I think that lineup's going to be really fun. I mean, all the young talent there. So I think you could see, you know, potentially a 2-round jump from, you know, him and Pasquantino. Maybe, I don't know, but 2-round for Naylor. I think maybe Naylor could go up a little bit more. And I think Naylor's pretty undervalued just in general. He didn't get undervalued in this draft in particular, but I think in general, and I was guilty of that too. And I kind of looked into his profile a month or two ago, kind of more deeply. And there was this, all right, man, I like a lot of what I see, but again, I don't think I see him being, you know, 3rd or 4th round guy here. But let's kind of move further down the board here, Chris. You know, let's look at our own teams a little bit more here. And we talked, you know, about some of our picks at the top. You know, let's go post round 10. So nothing in the first 10 rounds. Was there a pick or two of your own that you, I mean, you were just like, you really loved like the value that you got with that player?
feel like Rhys Hoskins' potential to return value at 273 is pretty high. I mean, I know he's been hurt. He's got to stay healthy. But on the, at the same time, like, that was a spot where it was felt like it was too good to pass up. And honestly, I didn't take a lot of prospects, but I did take Emmanuel Rodriguez at 316, which felt like a pretty good value as well.
Yeah.
So Ty France with the last pick, 344. He's a drive line. I mean, he wasn't as great last year, but he had a really good 2022. I think there's a potential return on investment. But if I had a favorite, like post round 10, probably Shota Imanaga. I don't think people know how to value him at this point.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to come over and be solid. I could see him returning top 100 value, and you got him at pick 189. I think he could give you, like, he doesn't have a ton of mileage on the arm. So I don't see a reason he can't give you 3 to 5 years of really good production, honestly. And so, you know, I felt pretty good about that one. Yeah, the rest of, like, Eloy at 161 was weird. I had no clue where to value him.
Dude, saying that's what I was, when I was thinking of this question, like, I was, like, looking at you getting Eloy and JT back-to-back in the 12 and 13. Is obviously different reasons why they're there.
Yeah.
In a win-now kind of mentality like you are with this draft, I think JT was great value there. As you look at this in terms of catchers, see, Adley went 4-2. Then we had a little bit of a gap, and then three straight to start round 7. William Contreras, Francisco Alvarez, Will Smith. You know, I don't think there's much surprises there. And then, again, another little gap. Gabriel Moreno was the 5th guy off the board in the 10th round. And then, okay, so he was still C6, which is kind of thought he'd be a little bit lower than that.
That's surprising. Yeah.
Unless there's a catcher here that's eligible at another spot that was a different color tile that I'm just not seeing. But yeah, I think he was. And then it's after them, you had Sean Murphy, Ian or Diaz, Samuel Basalo, Naylor Alhoppe. So yeah, I think he was. There was some, yeah, some misses him. I think he was C6, but still, even as the C6, still 13th round. So that's 140 with 170 something range there. I think that was great value. And Eloy, I mean, for the upside he brings to the table, or that we've seen a little bit of that upside, I think that spot with the core you already had, I think you could take the risk there for sure.
Yeah, I mean, Eloy's UT only, so that obviously drops his value. Real Muto, I mean, I think the fact that it's a one catcher league obviously saw the value depleted a little bit of catchers, but, you know, given some of the catchers went before him, I needed speed. Like, that was the thing I mentioned. I was lacking speed. And what an edge Real Muto gives you in the stolen base department, because every other catcher is getting almost a zero in speed. And here he is, he's going to give you at least 10. Like, I don't remember what exactly. I have to look up how many he had last year, but I feel like it was still a pretty respectable number. And
I feel like he was in the 14, 15 range, if I recall.
He stole 21. No, 16. Sorry. 21 in 2022 and 16 in 2023.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, even if he gives me 14, like, that's just a jump on everybody else, because most catchers aren't going to give you more than like 5. And I know that Real Muto had a bit of a down year, but still, he only had 540 plate appearances, and he had hit 20 home runs, stole 16 bases. I think there's value in that. And I could see a bounce back season for him in 2023, especially if he is DHing some, he's playing first, but I don't know what they're going to do with him, if they're going to catch him every day or not. But I'd love to see him get some more reps at DH and first base to kind of keep him fresh. And I think that would go a long way for him with the bat too. But yeah, with Eloy, I just figure, like, you just kind of gamble that he stays healthy and hits 30 home runs, and maybe there's a 270 average there. And even with UT only, I think there's value. It's a possibility that he's traded to a team that puts him in the outfield. I'd love for him to move to Atlanta. I mean, like, if the Braves can dump Marcelo Ozuna and put Eloy out there, why not? I mean, you give it a run and see what happens. But, you know, not sure that's plausible, but we'll see. But I'd love to see Eloy traded to a better team that maybe does a better job keeping him healthy. And I'm not saying that's all the White Sox fault, but I do think that strength and conditioning does have something to do with teams when they struggle with injuries consistently, like we've seen with the White Sox. So maybe a new team could kind of help Eloy out there.
You guys have enough bats. You know, you don't need another potential. Yeah, he'll do that, and he'll just go. He'll have his first healthy year. He'll hit like 36 home runs, driving like 108, hitting in like the 7th spot for you guys or something like that. I can totally see that. But yeah, he's one I was looking at from your team there. And even another couple, you know, I think Taylor Ward, I was kind of looking at him in that range as well. I think that's solid value. Obviously, he fell because, you know, he's injured as well. Even Dalton Varsho, I think, is fair value. Obviously, you know, Varsho, he didn't have as good of a year as people were hoping. He lost catch eligibility, which is a huge ding. Sure. But I think still, he's still in a decent power speed blend. And you've got to measure outfield 4 and outfield 5 if, you know, Eloy somehow, you know, gets outfield eligibility back. So, yeah, I think your outfield is really strong. You know, Ward's your outfield 5. So that's pretty damn good. And outfield 6, again, if Eloy gets that eligibility back. But for my team personally, like outside of the top 10 picks, you know, I liked getting Michael King in the 13th. And I'm probably, I'm pretty sure I'm a little bit higher than most on him, even as a Yankee. But I've always been a big Michael King guy. You know, I loved, you know, the real life value he brought to the Yankees, you know, being the guy come in really anywhere and give you, you know, multiple innings. And I think that was, you know, he was able to make that transition into the rotation pretty seamlessly because he was like a one inning relief guy. More often than not, it was 2+. So making that jump up was a little bit easier for him than it would be for other relievers. But I think it's legit. Like, is he going to be a stud? Maybe not, but could he be like an SP3? Absolutely. And he's my, you know, if you include McClanahan, he's my SP5 right now with Bayo being my 6. And he's got the command. He can miss bats. He has the 4-pitch mix that he uses to both-handed batters. So I like the King a lot there. I think what he did was, you know, pretty legit. And, you know, hearing rumblings that they're going to keep him in the rotation, which I think was a concern, even for me, at the beginning of the offseason, then hearing those kind of, you know, rumblings, like, all right, I feel a little bit better. It would have been dumb to put it back in the bullpen after what he did. But, you know, I also like Jaron Duran, you know, get a little Red Sox in here in the 11th round. And I mean, I don't think it was a great value per se. I don't think it was, I think it was fair, but I think the potential for him to jump up, you know, several rounds, maybe into like rounds, you know, 5, 6, 7 range at this time next year, especially if the Red Sox give him, you know, full-time plate appearances. And, you know, I said that I want him and Rafael playing full-time. And I think trading Verdugo, which I think is, you know, probably 60-70% chance, maybe I'm a little high on that. But if that happens, you know, opening up obviously more playing time in that outfield, assuming they don't trade him for another outfielder and they go for, you know, pitcher or second baseman or whatever, that'll kind of solidify his spot. And I think he's already started. I think it's more so Rafael who's the question, obviously. But you saw, you know, a lot of good things from Duran, you know, hitting for average, you know, cutting the K rate, getting back to the Duran that, you know, was a, you know, big rising prospect a handful of years ago before he tried to sell it for power. And that he's still hitting for power, just not selling out for it. But if he can be like that 15 homer, 30 plus steal guy, you know, probably gonna be the leadoff guy scoring a ton of runs. I think he's gonna be, you know, I think this is a guy that could flirt with top 50, 60 ish value there. So I like getting Duran in that spot. You know, Will Benson, he was one that, you know, he's hard on the value there, Chris. Like, I don't know. What are your thoughts on Will Benson for me there in the 17th rounds? Obviously, there was like this, what, 6, 7, 8 week stretch where he was one of the, you know, 5 best hitters in baseball. Then he kind of, you know, slowed down a bit and picked it back up end of the season. And obviously, you know, a lot of the skills are there, the ballpark's there, the lineup's there. So do you think Benson in the 17th, what do you think of that value there?
Outfield gets really shallow really quick.
It does, yeah.
Kind of what I've noticed is that it drops off super hard. And so, you know, I think in that spot, you take the upside play. Like, I don't hate the value at all at 228. And, like, I'm just looking at, like, I'm going to pull up other outfielders that went after Benson and just kind of to compare. I mean, like,
none that I was really intrigued by. I mean, yeah, no. Ward, I liked that you got you know, a little over 2 rounds later. But I wasn't really looking at Kwan, Teoscar, Suwinski, you know, guys like that. And then, you know, even like Leury Taveras, you know, he's decent, but I thought there was a pretty big, at least, gap in, you know, upside between, you know, Benson and the other guys that went behind him.
Yeah, I don't think you need Benson to be as good as he was last year to return value, because he's probably not going to be. I mean, in 329 plate appearances, 275, 365 OBP, really good, 11 home runs, 19 steals. So if he gives you, let's just roughly say, if he gives you 500 plate appearances and gives you 15 home runs and 20 steals with a 260 average, I think you're happy with that investment there at that spot. And honestly, I think there's more juice to be had. Like, he had 11 home runs, but the dude's bat has way more juice than that suggests. I mean, the average EV is over 90 miles an hour, over a 10% barrel rate, hit the ball in the sweet spot almost every time. I mean, like, the top of the league with a 40.5% sweet spot percentage. So he's doing everything you want to see to get to home runs. So it was a bit surprising that he only landed at 11, and especially in Great American Ballpark. He's only 25. I mean, I think there's still more here, and maybe he gives you a 2020 season. In that case, then I think it's a super good value.
Yeah, yeah, I'm there with you. Obviously, the upside is there. Power, good athlete. You know, he's a guy that was one of those guys that was a little bit too passive, but he became more aggressive in hunting out his pitches. So, yeah, I think he's my outfield four behind Robert Arozarena and Jaron Duran. So, I think that was pretty good value there. I like that spot. All right, Chris. So, let's round out the show here. You know, just overall, you know, if you could, you know, change something that you did, whether it be, you know, attacking a certain position earlier, you know, maybe a pick of regret, something, would you have changed, looking back, changed anything about how you approached this mock draft?
Probably just addressing speed earlier, because I feel like I had to kind of force it in spots. And yeah, starting with Alvarez and Harper, I mean, that's pretty much a zero. And so, you know, you hope that O'Neill Cruz is healthy and can give you 20, but then Trout's a zero. Yelich is maybe 10 to 15. Kettle Marte, maybe 5. Bregman's a zero. Eloy's a zero. That's why, honestly, I took Dalton Varsho, because I felt pressure for speed there just to make up a little ground. And Varsho is still a source of speed. And so probably addressing speed a little bit earlier in the beginning of rounds, you have to do it in order to contend in that spot. And while I like the bats, it's probably a good idea to not start with Harper and Alvarez, even though it's a lot of fun. The Kettle Marte pick's probably one that I regret the most. Like, I was pretty set on taking Bryson Stott, like, in that spot, and he went the pick before me, which was a little bit demoralizing. Jesse Roach took him at 104, and I literally had him ready to just go at 105. But I kind of pivoted a little bit and felt pressure at second base. And so that hurt in a way, too, because I wonder if I had taken somebody else and waited on second base, would I have been better off? Because Kettle Marte's fine. Like, he had a good season. But yeah, could I have waited on somebody and got somebody similar? Like, could Jonathan India rebound and be a similar player? He went over 100 picks later. Like, so that's something, too, to think about. And probably if I had not gotten sniped, I probably would have felt a little bit better about that one. But that's probably the biggest, like, regret of a pick, I guess, if there was one, would be Marte, who's fine, but not somebody that, like, I'm enthralled to take at pick 105, especially with some decent options later. And if I had not taken Marte, looking at guys who went after him, like, you could have had a Shane Boz, or you took it Shane McClanahan. There was Joe Ryan there. There was Joe Musgrove. Like, I could have gone with another pitcher. Even Ha-Seong Kim, who you took, like, probably was a better option than Kettle Marte. It was just, like, almost like the immediate reaction, the pressure of, like, dang it, got sniped, I got to get a second baseman. And Marte was just the next one on the board. And even though I didn't love it, I just hit it and went with it.
Yeah, and second base gets kind of, you know, meh pretty quickly there. So that was one of the things I liked. I tackled that position early on in the draft, obviously getting Matt McClain, who's second base eligible, at least for this year. Getting a guy like Ha-Seong Kim, who has the eligibility as well. And even though I think we talked about Kim several episodes ago, and I think he's going to take a little bit of a step back, at least in the power department, I thought ninth round was pretty solid for him. But for me, I think I would have been a little more aggressive with pitching. Again, I like some of the guys I got, and again, I think this could be a pretty good pitching staff years two, three. But if I wanted to, you know, I think to truly be a team that could contend for a championship in this, you know, in this hypothetical league in year one, I would have had to get a pitcher earlier. And I think the spot I'm looking at right now, pick I would have changed. Even I like Pete Alonso, that would have been the spot where I probably should have gone Corbin Burns there. And that's what I was heavily debating, and going Pete, but I should have went Burns there, who for me right now is my third or fourth. Yeah, I think I messed my third starting pitcher, right in front of Yuri and G-Rod. So I should have went him there. And then knowing how deep first base is getting again, you know, with Bellinger, you know, getting back up to, you know, near elite levels, you know, Torkelson emerging, Casas emerging, you know, CES, you know, the list goes on. Not even some of these guys like Christian Walker and obviously Lowe that we already talked about dropped, you know, a ton. You know, even Spencer Steer, even Paul Goldschmidt, who I think still has a good few good years left in him. I probably would have waited a little bit more in first base, just knowing the depth that there's at that position, and gone with the Burns. So if I started with Burns and had Williams as my two, I would have felt a lot better about that. And maybe I want to take a McClanahan. I don't know. But yeah, I think, you know, again, this could be a team that with some tweaks, like, you know, to the pitching staff, I could be a contender in year one. But I think I would have been a better setup for year one if I had attacked pitching a little bit earlier. But all right, that's going to wrap us up here. Obviously, always a lot of fun doing these mock drafts, and, you know, with all these phenomenal baseball minds across the industry that are pumping out so much good content, written, audio, video, you know, they do it. You name, you know, a lot of good people in this mock draft. So thank you to everybody that participated in this mock draft. Obviously, we'll do it again next year. We do it every year. Always a lot of fun to see how values change year to year. But that is going to wrap us up today. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure you check out DynastyDugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com for more work from each of us. And join us again next time. But until then, everyone take care.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.